I'm going to call this meeting to order.
Was that official? No.
It is 5 minutes after 3, and we'll get our House Hess Committee meeting started. Let the record reflect that Representative Cisna, Representative Gardner, and Representative Seaton and myself, Wilson, are present. And we will, Representative Corrine is excused, and he's on travel status today. So today on the agenda, we'll have a presentation on Bring the Children Home. And it's the proposal by the governor, and it's Mr. Bill Hogan is the director of the Division of Behavior Health. And he's going to be doing the presentation, and I think we're going to bring some others up with you. So, Bill, I'll just let you do your thing. And we'll let you to give kind of a talk for the first 15 minutes before we start asking questions. And then after that, we can ask questions. So let's kind of use that agenda for now. And so, Bill, you just go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Bill Hogan. I'm the director of the Division of Behavioral Health in the Department of Health and Social Services. And I come before you today to talk about the Bring the Kids Home initiative. It's an initiative.
And I'm sorry, but it's under tab one in your three rings. So, okay, sorry, go ahead.
It's an initiative that the governor and our commissioner, Joel Gilbertson, feel very strongly about. And what I'd like to do is to present this afternoon in the following way. First, I want to articulate exactly what the problem is, talk a little bit about what our vision is for a system of care for kids and families in Alaska, talk about the solution to the problem of kids being in out-of-state residential psychiatric treatment center placements, talk about some recent successes, what we've included in our fiscal year 06 budget for this particular initiative, and then reaffirm our commitment to ensuring that kids with serious emotional disturbance, substance abuse problems, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, developmental disabilities, traumatic brain injury, all of those kids get a chance to live in their own communities, stay with their own families, and be treated in Alaska. As many of you know, over the last 6 years particularly, there's been a marked increase in the number of kids with these kinds of problems going to out-of-state psychiatric treatment centers. These centers are spread throughout the lower 48. We have as many as 50 different facilities at this point where Alaska kids go. And they are spread throughout the country. Some are in the Northeast, some are in Texas, some are in Utah. The chart to my left shows the growth in out-of-state placement. So you can see in state fiscal year we had nearly no kids in out-of-state placement. There was a marked increase beginning, I would say, state fiscal year 2000, and then it's risen pretty steadily since then. The chart does show that there's been some leveling out, and I'll talk about that in a few minutes about why that may be. The second chart talks about the growth in number of days that these kids are in these placements. One of the things that we've discovered is that during this six-year period, the length of stay for kids in these placements has grown pretty dramatically, on average about 2 months longer, 60 days longer, than what we were seeing prior to 98, and certainly it's a significant problem. And then the last chart we want to show, or I want to show, is the dollars that have been spent not only on out-of-state residential psychiatric treatment, but on residential psychiatric treatment centers in general. So again, you can see a marked increase, particularly since state fiscal year 2000. Last fiscal year, we spent nearly $50 million on residential psychiatric treatment for kids in out-of-state placements. The typical match for Medicaid for these kids is about 40 to 42% state general fund dollars, the rest federal Medicaid dollars. So you can see with those numbers that between 18 and 20 million state general fund dollars used for Medicaid match have been spent in out-of-state. I think there's a couple of reasons why this there's been this marked increase. One, I would suggest, is right around state fiscal year 2000 is when Denali KidCare started. So there are a number of kids who had not been on the Medicaid rolls who are now eligible to be on the Medicaid rolls, and many of those kids did have mental health problems. The second is we really have not had a very adequate, what I would call, care coordination or gatekeeping mechanism. And by that, I mean we really have not done a good job of making sure that kids stay in-state if there are in-state options. Nor have we been very aggressive in monitoring their care out of state. So in many instances, kids have languished sometimes up to over two years in these placements. And then I guess the most obvious thing is that we really have not had in-state capacity, not only at this level of care, but at all levels of care. I want to talk to you a little bit about what we envision. And what we envision is a comprehensive system of care for kids and families. And when I say that, what I mean to suggest is that we want to build a system that focuses on prevention, early intervention, treatment, and recovery.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I have a question. Is this okay?
Representative Gardner, I think what we're going to try to do is let him go through it, and then we'll ask questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that we want to have that system built on the principles, again, of keeping kids in their own home, if at all possible, and in their own communities and villages. We want to build the system from the village up. Nearly 40% of kids in out-of-state placement are Alaska Native kids. And without a basic core services in villages and in hub communities, we're not going to be able to solve this problem. And we're not going to be able to build the kind of system of care that we need for all Alaskans. This problem and a potential solution has been talked about, I think, at least for the last several years. But we really have focused a great deal of emphasis over the last year or so. And I want to say that the solution that we're going to propose is being developed with all of our primary partners. And I want to acknowledge specifically the Mental Health Trust. They've been instrumental in helping us formulate a solution to this problem. I also want to recognize the Alaska Mental Health Board, the Advisory Board on Alcohol and Drug Abuse, the Governor's Council on Disabilities, all of our Native health organizations, particularly the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, consumers, family members, and advocates. So this is something that we need to solve with input from all of our stakeholders. It's not something that the division or the department can solve in and of itself. We want to start by building on what seems to be successful. When you look at the number of kids in out-of-state placement, only about 75 to 80 of those kids at any one time are custody kids, kids in the custody of Office of Children's Services or the Division of Juvenile Justice. So we want to build on what they've already have in place. They have regional placement teams. They have an out-of-state placement committee. And we want to use that structure to ensure that we're exploring all in-state options before a child goes out. We want to make sure that we include in our system of care many more services on the front end of care. And by that, I mean things like in-home intervention, wraparound services similar to the Alaska Youth Initiative program that we used to have in Alaska. We want to expand school-based services, respite and crisis respite options, a crisis nursery. We want to enhance our treatment foster care program. We want to develop some small group homes. We want to develop what we're calling a multi-dimensional home for kids who may be coming out of the juvenile justice system. We want to enhance the residential treatment options that are already available for kids in custody. And certainly we want to develop some residential psychiatric treatment center capacity in Alaska. What we are not suggesting, and I hope this comes across clearly to this afternoon, to the committee, is we are not suggesting that because we have 400-plus kids in out-of-state residential psychiatric treatment beds that we need 400 RPTC beds in Alaska. The emphasis is really on the lower levels of community-based care, and that's where we want to put our emphasis. However, having said that, we do need some in-state RPTC capacity, and we are in the process of determining exactly what the number of those beds should be and what geographic location in which they should be located. Our goal is by the year 2015 that we will have no kids out of state. So this is a 10-year plan, and we're trying to be realistic about how we do this. One of the things I would like to share with you briefly, Mike, are you back there? This is a pie chart. It's something a little bit more visual or visible than talking about this in a narrative sort of way. But what this is showing is that in fiscal year 06, we expect to reduce the number of kids in out-of-state placement by about 50. And that we will build in-state capacity at a number of levels of care. Then by FY010, you can see an increase, again, in various levels of care, including in-state RPTC. And then finally, by 2015, there will be no kids. All of the kids that would have gone to out-of-state placement will be served in-state. So three sheets, perhaps a little more easy to understand. We want to, over those 10 years, ensure that we are making progress. And as a result, we've developed some performance measures and indicators. So we want to clearly see that there's a shift in kids staying in-state rather than going out-of-state. That's sort of the simplest one, I think. We want to show that there's a funding shift, that the Medicaid dollars are staying in-state and not going about out of state. We want to monitor the length of stay and make sure that kids are not staying longer than they need to. We want to make sure that there is increased service capacity at all levels, so we're going to be monitoring the number of beds and slots that come on board. We want to improve the effectiveness and reduce recidivism. One of the things that we've learned is that kids maybe in residential care, they get out of residential care for 30 or 60 days and they end up going back in. We've got to work and do a much better job to ensure that that doesn't happen. And we're also going to look at basic client satisfaction, family satisfaction, and functional improvement in areas like, does the child, as a result of treatment in state, graduate from school? In FY06 and 07, we anticipate an increase of approximately $5 million to this initiative. About $2.2 million of that is from the Mental Health Trust, our primary partner. We anticipate some increase in Medicaid, about $2.8 million. The GF increase will be going to the Medicaid match. We're not asking for additional pure GF dollars for this particular project at this time. Let me talk a little bit about what seems to be working. Again, as if you go back to the first chart, you can see that our numbers seem to be stabilizing in the 400 or so area. I think part of the reason for that is what I would call the sentinel effect. In other words, we're paying attention. The providers know we're paying attention. First Health, who monitors out-of-state placements for us, knows that we are serious about this. And we are beginning to bring some kids back in a deliberate and planned way. I want to highlight the Anchorage 5-Kid Project. That's how they refer to themselves in Anchorage, the providers. But they took it upon themselves to identify kids who had come from Anchorage to out-of-state placements and at this point have brought over 20 kids back by working together among themselves to create the kind of system of care that I've just described. That particular project is being replicated in Fairbanks. So in conclusion, and then I will ask Jeff Jesse from the Mental Health Trust and Charles Fagerstrom from the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium to come up and say a few words. But in conclusion, what I want to reaffirm is that what we really want to build here is a system of care. And we really want to focus our resources and efforts on the front end. We want to develop a system that ensures that kids are ultimately self-sufficient as adults and end up being contributing members to society. And we want to make sure that we include our faith-based and voluntary organizations in this effort, as well as our more traditional providers. We also want to make sure that the system's cost-effective and efficient. And we understand that we can't do this ourselves, and we need input from all of our stakeholders. And we also want to make sure that this does not appear as something that is a top-down approach. We really need community input, and we need the communities to be our partners in this. So with that, I will stop briefly. I'll let Jeff and Charles say a few words, and then I'll be available for questions.
Okay. I do think I've already one of the members of the committee wants a more thorough explanation of
that.
Yeah. each one individually, because we weren't sure which one you were talking about.
Okay.
And then
what this is, I apologize if it's confusing. What we're attempting to show here is that there is currently about 450 kids. That's the complete pie in out-of-state placement. If you take one piece of the pie in fiscal year 06, that should be your top sheet, that particular piece, then those 50 kids would be served in a variety of community services, and you'll see the colors and the numbers. So there would be 50 less kids served in out-of-state, and those kids would be served in-state in a variety of options. So your first sheet is FY06. Your second sheet is to show that by FY10, there would be 250 kids served in an array of community-based options. So there would then only be about 250 on average in out-of-state placements. And then finally, at FY14, or as we approach 2015, we would have no kids in out-of-state placement, and all kids would have been served in-state.
Thank you. Let the record show that Representative McGuire and Representative Anderson have joined us, and also our helpers over here to my right, Amy Randell and Doug Learman. Thank you for being here and helping us out. And I'll go ahead and let you, Jesse, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jeff Jesse. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. To set the stage for the trust involvement here, the trustees in this last year made a decision to try to focus the efforts of the trust into four distinct areas. Rather than fund a lot of projects across the entire mental health program, we selected four focus areas, and one of them was bring the kids home. And so we have worked with the department and the administration to try in a collaborative way to come up with a common vision of what is it that we need to accomplish, how are we going to get there, and then how can the trust assist the state in getting there. We've been very pleased with the cooperation of the department. One of the things the trust did is we set up a work group to basically pull together various stakeholders to work in this area. The department's been working with us very closely on this. We're very optimistic that this is a doable thing. We know what works. We agree on what works. We know we need to develop a continuum of care in the state. As Bill Hogan said, we know that what we don't want is just to build a bunch of inpatient beds in the state of Alaska. This is bring the kids home, not bring the kids to Anchorage, not bring the kids to other institutional settings in the state. So again, we're working very closely with the department. As Bill said, the trust has made a significant financial commitment to the project. It's very complicated. There are a lot of moving parts, but I think if we continue to work together, I know we want to bring Charles Fagerstrom up from the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, which has been a leader in helping to pull the Native side of this together, because certainly a disproportionate number of these kids that are placed out of state are Natives, and I think the fact that they're is this effort on the part of the Tribal Health Consortium with their leadership to pull the health corporations together, I think is just another example of how this is truly a very collaborative process.
Thank you.
Charles?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Charles Fagerstrom. I'm from the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium in Anchorage, and just like to reiterate what Bill and Jeff had said about the need to respond, but not to have a knee-jerk reaction and look at the whole continuum of care. And over the last few weeks, I facilitated a meeting amongst all of the tribal health programs to respond to the RPTC need, and there was a unanimous agreement that we not just focus on RPTCs and look at the whole spectrum of care, particularly the front end of care. So I'm very encouraged, and it looks like we have alignment as far as where we all want to go, and collectively I think we can get there. So we've got an aggressive 4-month schedule of some tribal meetings amongst behavioral health providers, and we will come up and articulate a plan as far as how we're going to meet that need, looking at, you know, some criteria as far as getting these kids back home and keeping them home and in the least restrictive and most culturally appropriate setting. So I'm very encouraged, and like Bill said, it's not going to be a matter of taking 400 plus beds and then displacing them to Alaska. You'll just have the same problem. What we want to do is prevent those kids from getting there in the first place, and I think there's a large percentage of those kids that if you had the right upfront wraparound community-based and treatment services, that we could take care of them in that fashion. So I'm very encouraged and look forward to a lot of planning and networking and weaving together all of these plans, which it sounds like we're all shooting towards the same goal. So thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from the committee? Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I had one quick question, and I believe you answered it, but I just want to confirm it. Of the 450-some-odd kids who are in out-of-state placement, did you say about 85% of them are in state custody?
No, about 85 of those kids are at any one time are in state custody. The rest,
all?
The rest are not.
Oh my goodness! Okay, that's a surprise to me.
Bill, is there any kind of common denominator of something that we can do as prevention? Is there something out there, or is this just totally all different kinds of things that you can't pin down or anything?
Madam Chair, most of the diagnoses are primarily what we refer to as affective psychoses, and by that I mean major depression or bipolar disorder with psychotic features. These are pretty serious diagnoses. These kids have serious problems. As far as prevention, one of the things that we certainly want to focus on with kids in general is building resiliency. And so the work really here is not only with kids and families, but with communities. There's been a lot of work on resiliency since 9/11 and how some kids who went through the 9/11 experience in Manhattan fared much better psychologically than others. And so there's a lot of impetus on research around resiliency, but part of what we need to do as a state, and certainly within the division of the department, is to focus more on resiliency, essentially building strengths, assets in kids and families, and reducing risk factors, whatever those risk factors might be in the community.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, referring to your first chart on unduplicated count, you have it going in. Yeah, if you can put that back up. I guess that's from 1998 is going from zero. Now, this is only on those that are out of state. Does that mean that we had we were taking care of all the needs in state before that date? And, you know, what kind of total count? I'm trying to figure out if this is a growth in a population and or whether there is a shift from in-state to out-of-state.
Representative Seaton, through the chair, it's an excellent question. I would not suggest that we, before 1998, were meeting all the needs of every child. I think there probably is some general population growth. the number of kids in Alaska, I'm sure, was growing or has grown. The prevalence rate nationally is about 10 to 15% of all kids have a serious emotional disturbance, and that's fairly typical for our state as well. I'm not sure exactly why this tremendous increase, other than, again, I think around 2000, the Denali Kid Care increase, or at least some of that could be attributed to Denali Kid Care. I can do a little more research for you, Representative Seaton, and I'd be glad to do that, because I don't really have a good answer at this point. It would just be conjecture.
Yeah.
Follow up?
Madam Chair, yeah, I'm on that point. I'm, you know, just concerned to figure out what our baseline data is and what's contributing to the problem, so I'd sure appreciate that. Another question?
Follow up. Go ahead.
Last year, we approved a certificate of need program.
Mm-hmm.
Have there been any facilities that have come forward and have been slowed up under that certificate of need program, or has that necessity to get a certificate of need before building a residential care facility slowed, to your knowledge, any construction of any facilities that would allow some of these kids to be brought home?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, at this point, I would say no. There is a moratorium on certificate of need. We have had two applications and one letter of intent. As I indicated earlier, we want to be deliberate and make sure that we're building the right kind of capacity in the right geographic locations. I could defer to our commissioner, Mr. Gilbertson, if that would help.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Well, good afternoon. I guess for the record, my name is Joel Gilbertson, the Department of Health and Social Services. Through the chair, Representative Seaton, there was legislation that was passed by the last legislature, House Bill 511, last session, that did place under the state certificate of need program certificate of need review for RPTC projects, or residential psychiatric treatment center projects. That was approved by both bodies and signed by the governor and is now in place. As Director Hogan stated, we do have two applications in that are completed applications for residential psychiatric treatment center projects, one by an entity, Cornell, and another by an entity, North Star, who operates in Anchorage right now. We also have another letter of interest that's in. As Bill's presentation shows, in-state RPTC capacity, residential psychiatric treatment center capacity, is a piece of the service array that we do need to develop as part of that continuum of care, that great buzzword that you've heard from a number of the presenters today, which is, what are the services we have to provide in-state, from the lowest level to the highest level, to serve those children out of state, in-state? And we talk about bringing the kids home. We're not physically bringing kids home from out of state, of course. They'll age out of the programs that they're in. Some kids will be able to identify and find treatment arrays in-state. But really, what does that service array need to build in-state to serve them? So RPTC is a portion of that. Your question is, are projects being slowed down? I do not believe so as a result of that. There are some other extraneous issues going on right now, including litigation against the state around the Certificate of Need program generally, that has delayed the application of some of the Certificate of Need statute to some of the pending applications. We have had dialogue with both of the parties who have completed applications before the state. To the best of my knowledge, both of them are satisfied with the process that we are engaged in right now to get those projects reviewed. We are expediting promulgation of regulations. Even in the next couple weeks, we'll have the regulations on the street for new Certificate of Need standards for these projects. So I think that the review process moving forward, the parties who are developing them are all planning, if approved, to have projects up and running sometime next calendar year. So these projects still have some time delay before they'll even come online. What I think Director Hogan, and to speak for Jeff, Jesse, and others, I think what they will all say and have said is that each of these pieces of this service array, this continuum of care, they have to come in a concerted fashion and with some deliberation. And it's not putting one ahead of the other. That gatekeeping system, that ability of doing care coordination, the ability of getting service capacity available in-state, needs to be done in an organized fashion. And RPTC capacity building is a part of that, but it has to come online in an orderly fashion with the other supportive services around it. I don't think the projects are slowed down. That's my position. And the parties that we're working with right now in applications are satisfied with the process.
Thank you.
Follow-up. And there is a moratorium on the issuance of those now, but they are being analyzed and they're progressing, although there's a moratorium on issuance. Is that what I understand?
Responding to the chair, Representative Seaton, to some extent, the moratorium is a legal fiction. The moratorium is merely a public acknowledgement by the department because we do believe in transparency. We want all parties affected by a certificate of need to be aware of the process that's underway. We have made the administrative decision to delay final decision-making on certificate of need applications until new standards are promulgated. As part of House Bill 511 that this body passed, previous legislature passed, it did include intent language in that bill. And the intent language required two things by the department. One was the convening of a task force to look at various aspects of certificate of need and to involve parties that are affected by certificate of need and for them to provide input on how we can adopt regulations to streamline the process and to make it least burdensome upon the providers who have to participate with the certificate of need program, which is a statute. And the second portion of the intent language that is attached to that legislation by the legislature was that the department would move expeditiously to adopt new standards of review for the certificate of need program. We took that intent language seriously in the interim. We convened that task force in August of last year. We invited all participants, all entities that are affected by certificate of need in the state of Alaska, we invited them to participate. Slightly over 20 took us up on the offer and participated in a facilitated session in Anchorage by the department, provided a host of comments around certificate of need. We also began a process that had already begun, actually, to adopt those new standards. We procured the services of an entity, Information Insights, to do a first round of drafting standards. And not to hijack this committee, I guess, and turn it into a discussion of certificate of need rather than simply RPTC care and bring the kids home, I'll say that these standards apply much broader than just residential psychiatric treatment center care. This is all aspects of certificate of need, from inpatient hospital services to imaging services, various services across the state that are regulated by certificate of need. We received those standards back. One of the requests that came from the task force meeting that was requested by the legislature that was convened in August was a request from the actual entities in the state that the state put those standards out for public comment even before they're ready to go into regulation. We put them out for public comment in September. At the request of some providers, we extended the comment period through the end of November of last year. That comment period finished. We received about 90 pages of good comments from providers. During that time, there were, as I said, some other issues that arose. I don't want to get into them too much today, except to say that there was a need for us to announce that we were not going to issue any additional certificates of need until these standards were being adopted through regulation. It was the intention of the department naturally to update the standards, and we certainly felt that as we were getting ready to put the new standards out that the legislature had requested out for public comment and to get them implemented, it didn't make a lot of sense to start rushing CON decisions through the process while you're changing the standards. So we worked with all the parties affected. We met with organizations who had applications pending before the department. We explained the process. To the best of my knowledge, they're completely satisfied with the process. And to amplify, I think, what your concern is and our concern is, which is let's not slow down these good projects if we believe they're good. We carved out the residential psychiatric treatment center portion of that regulatory package, and we're putting them out on an expedited basis out for public comment. That should be wrapped up. I think they're going out for public comment within the next week or two, and they'll be finalized as soon as the public comment period wraps up and the Department of Law and the Lieutenant Governor sign off on them. And then we will either award or deny a certificate of needs for RPTC. Either way, this whole process will be wrapped up long before we actually get to the actual implementation of the Bring the Kids Home initiative.
Representative McGuire.
Thank you. Well, on that point, Commissioner Gilbertson, it might be helpful, I don't know, in your discussions with the chair, but at some point, it might be helpful to have a formal presentation from you on the results of the task force. And,
you know, to come back to this body. This seems like the appropriate place.
Responding to the chair, Representative McGuire, we'd be happy to do it. I think the task force meeting was very productive. We received a number of comments. We actually are going to be changing a number of aspects of the certificate of need process, and those will be done through regulation as well. It was our intent initially to put out one large regulatory package, promulgate those regulations that adopted both the standards and the process change because of the need to move these RPTC reviews faster. We decided to split up that package. So we have not yet put out for public comment. We put them as the second package to go out, the actual standard changes and the process changes for non-RPTC care. But I'd be certainly happy to share that. And I believe we also sent to all legislators and their offices summaries of that task force meeting. And the transcript's available as well.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I, Commissioner, understand we've spoken, and I think that members of the committee should be privy to the fact that there's the litigation, and then there's the entities that you mentioned, Cornell and North Star, that are interested in this. But I think Representative Seaton's questions, and appreciate your responses, are appropriate because there's somewhat of an anticipatory climate with these, as you've noted. I mean, these businesses are investing, and I know you mentioned, because you've been frustrated, the alleged fiction of this, like, hey, I still have to go through the process, as you've testified, the promulgation of regulations and that. But his question was, I think, appropriate in that he asked, if you wanted to, could you issue sooner than what you're choosing to do, the CON? And I think you could, and I recognize you're trying to be prudent, but on the other side of it, there's investment strategies and there's businesses or buildings that are being looked at least one and rental and that, I guess, the perception is that it's been frozen because of the delay. So just for the record, I want to say I appreciate and respect the fact that you're trying to be deliberative, but on the other side, and we've talked, I mean, this isn't new, that, and I think others have asked the same question with the same concern, that there are these companies that want to come in. If you want to say want to bring the kids home, that's a fine mantra. Your staff has already said it may not be in Anchorage. The key is that we make it efficient and all Alaskan if possible. But they also bring a good message too. Hey, we want to bring them. We like them in Anchorage. We want to bid. We're ready to go and go as quick as you can. And don't look to this lawsuit as a hindrance for our specific, which have nothing to do with open imaging or Providence.
Responding to the chair, Representative Anderson, first of all, restate that first, I do not believe these projects are being slowed down. I do not. I also will restate that we have met with the parties, the affected parties, and we have not discussed their certificate of need applications. That's improper. But what we have discussed with them is the process for getting the regulations out for public comment. As all affected parties are, the regulations are not out for public comment yet. So we do engage with informal communications with affected parties to try to address their concerns up front before regulations go out for public comment. To the best, I've met with both Cornell and North Star, both entities, to express to me that they're satisfied with the process and the expedited process for getting the regulations out for public comment, and I take them at their word, and I hope they take me at my word as well, that we're trying to move this along as quickly as possible. That said, We will be making a decision on these CON applications as soon as possible and when prudent, and at the end of the day, it will be compliant with the statutes, which is ultimately what guides my decision making.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I know we and back to another of Representative Seaton's questions on the prevention side. There's a body, a long, extensive body of research and experience that shows that preventative work is effective with children, and that if in fact we help families early, we can prevent the incredible climb that you see right there. And that climb is really quite frightening, because I've worked with children professionally in institutional settings. Institutional settings are not good for children, and anything we can do to prevent it would save the state money beyond even calculation at this point. That says there's a problem out there, and what are we doing to address that problem early?
Yeah, Responding to the chair, Representative Sisna, first, I'm going to bifurcate this response to some extent and allow Bill to come back up here and talk about the programs and the direction he's taking our behavioral health system in the state, because he is a person like myself who is invested in prevention. As you look at the governor's budget for FY06, you'll see overwhelmingly where we invest our increments, they're around prevention efforts. I'm a public health professional by background and education training. I believe in prevention, population-based wide interventions and also individual interventions to reduce the damage that's caused downstream from unhealthy behaviors or negative actions in families and communities. I, too, am alarmed by that out-of-state placement. When I came into office, it was at its peak, that trend line. We were at its peak. It just shocked me when I came in, when I saw the numbers that are out there. And we've been aggressively working since I came into office, and I know the Mental Trust has worked on this for some period of time as well, and Bill's a person who, before he became the director, was a clinician, chief executive of one of our community providers, and has been following this issue for some period of time. We're working aggressively to find ways to serve kids in state, but also to reduce the demand for services by looking at the core root cause issues and ways that we can address through prevention solutions. And that's not just applicable to this case. It's not just out-of-state placements. Prevention is a key component and variety of aspects of cost drivers in our department and utilization of services. I know this committee had invited another director in our department, Dr. Monsager, to talk about some chronic disease issues and just the burden that's being placed upon our state by substance abuse. And I think substance abuse overwhelmingly is a huge force in driving these negative trends in our state. And that's why the governor's taken a special focus on this. That's why his budget for this year requests $6 million in additional funding for prevention efforts. We have to invest in prevention. You're not going to find a greater ally on that issue. And I think you won't find a better ally than Bill Hogan as well, but I'll let him answer as well. If I have the discretion to invite him up to replace me with your, obviously, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you, Commissioner, and Representative Sisna through the chair. Just to reaffirm the Commissioner's comments on a substance abuse prevention initiative that is in the governor's budget, you know, we are in the process of trying to integrate mental health and substance abuse services throughout the state, and because we recognize that many kids and adults have both problems or a co-occurring disorder, about 80%. So we have every intention of using what the governor has announced as a substance abuse initiative and framing it or trying to reframe it at some level as a behavioral health initiative. And in that initiative, we will have money going to community agencies to work with 11 and 12-year-olds. We will have money going towards an underage drinking initiative, and obviously you've got to have certain coping skills and problem-solving skills, conflict resolution skills, anger management skills to be able to say no when somebody offers you a drink, particularly when you're a kid. And we also plan to engage in a multimedia education campaign, and it really is going to be built around assets. When we built our new division, we hired Becky Judd. I don't know if people know Becky, but Becky's pretty well known in the Anchorage community and throughout the state as somebody who is firmly committed to prevention. And we call her a resiliency specialist. So we recognize from the beginning, as the president recognized with his new Freedom Commission on Mental Health, that resiliency and recovery is the focus. So I don't think you would have no argument, certainly from anyone within our division or the department or all the way up to the governor, that prevention is not important. And we will continue to the best of our ability to put additional dollars into prevention.
Follow-up, Representative.
Thank you very much. And actually, I think that's wonderful. That's great. And is that a part of the problem? Well, possibly. I'm thinking in terms of, you're talking about severely emotionally disturbed children. Alcoholism has affected their parents. It affects all of society. All of the children I've worked with, and I started working with emotionally disturbed kids in 1963. So I go back a long, long way. All of the kids that I've seen recently have a depressive quality to them that we didn't see back back a number of decades ago. And that's what I think, that parents need help with kids. These kids probably somewhere in early screening could have been caught, and the parents need help working with these kids. It's not just their access to professionals, but their parents need help in making sure that they're advocates for their kids, number one, and that they can actually manage the behaviors so they don't have to be institutionalized. And that can be taught. I know that these services could be, and that the private sector could do a huge amount of this. We could create the incentives for it. But that's what I'm really interested in that one question of mine.
Representative Sisna, through the chair, I would give you no argument. I absolutely agree, and I do think that this is a role for faith-based organizations or voluntary organizations. Parenting skills, basic parenting skill classes would be extremely helpful to a number of these families. And I think recognizing the symptoms of mental illness, particularly in kids, just basic awareness and education would be extremely helpful. So I would not refute. I mean, I absolutely agree with what you're saying, Representative Sisna.
Thank you. Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. You mentioned substance abuse in the governor's plan, and I remember on the 12th, the State of the State address and discussion articles recently in the Daily News, at least, on budget shortfalls. Do you, and maybe you're the wrong person to ask, but is there a potential for an alcohol tax, do you think? And has there been discussion?
Representative Anderson, through the chair, I'm not sure. I think there's been some discussion. I know the Advisory Board on Alcohol and Drug Abuse has been talking again about an alcohol tax. I just, beyond that, I'm just not sure.
Yeah, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The mix of residential facilities. Back up to these charts for a minute. They're a little confusing. Does this mean that in 2014 we're still going to have 450 out of state plus this number in state? I mean,
Representative Seaton, through the chair, at the risk of being chastised by my commissioner. No, what it's supposed to show, and I apologize for it being confusing, is it's supposed to show that by the year 2015, there will be no kids in out-of-state placement, and I apologize for being so confusing, and that by that year, the kids will be in an array of options in Alaska. I apologize, and again, I'm sure I'll be chastised by the commissioner.
Madam Chair,
can I follow up? Yeah.
So as I'm seeing this, then in 2014, you would see 100 residential facilities levels 2 through 4 as being the mix. Is that so? I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out, is that the number of beds, or what are can you tell us level 2 through 4 beds, what those are?
Yes, Representative Seaton, through the chair. What we tried to show again is that there would be an array. I don't want you to take this and say that, well, this looks like there's only going to be 100 in-state RPTC beds or only 100 residential facilities level 2 through 5. That is not what we intended. What we intended to show was that these kids would be in an array of facilities, and the exact number is frankly pretty flexible when you're thinking 10 years out. I'm not quite sure what those numbers might look like. Level 2 through level 4 actually refer to residential facilities that are primarily funded through the Office of Children's Services, licensed by the Office of Children's Services, and are funded through Medicaid. These are usually pretty small facilities, between 5 and 8 beds. They're found throughout the state. And I don't know if some people had an opportunity, but the Alaska Association of Homes for Children has been meeting here for the last couple of days and had a reception, I think it was Wednesday evening, maybe Tuesday evening. And so it's a very good group. They do an excellent job. And part of what we intend to do is to help them enhance their service. But it is at a lower level of care. So when we talk about RPTC, we sort of describe that as level 5. And then there are lower levels of care that many of our smaller providers provide, and we want to build on their strengths because we think they do an excellent job. I hope that's a little clearer. And again, I apologize for this, and I'll clean it up next time.
Well, I would. So we don't have an estimate within the. If I can't follow up, so there is an estimate that about half of the people coming back to the state would be in some kind of residential, whether it's the RPTC or whether it be level 2 through 4. Is that what I'm?
Representative Seaton, I think that's a fair assumption. Yes, there will be some kids, no matter what we do, that need to unfortunately go into out-of-home placements.
And I do fully agree with you that all of the in-home and in-village and the other services are obviously the best way to treat people. But I'm just trying to get a handle on what this is meaning.
Gardner.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. One quick question. I'm personally acquainted with quite a few families who have sent children out of state using private